The fog is the place that nobody likes to be. And during that fog is when we overcomplicate, overexpect, too many expectations, all the other thoughts, fears, all the other struggles that we have. We doubt ourselves at a deep level.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, who fell over 1 meter before the finish line of a 10K and crawled across it, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for joining me for the Running for Real podcast. And I want to make a moment here to thank you for all the kind words, the sharing you've done with family, friends, Facebook groups, and wherever else. It means so much to me that you've taken the time to do that. My number one goal right now, I shouldn't say my number one goal. I've told you what my number one goal is, to get my health back, which you probably already know if you listened to episode one or you did read my monster blog post about me taking a break from running. But anyway, back to the point. My second goal right now is to get to the new and noteworthy section of iTunes in the health section. And you guys are helping me to get there by your rating, your reviews, your sharing, whatever else. So thank you so much for doing that. I really appreciate it. And I really do read your comments, and I want to thank you for all the love and support you've given me. I'm so glad you're enjoying it, and hopefully I can continue to improve and give you episodes that you enjoy. So today is the last day you can enter the giveaway to be one of 5 winners of Steve's half marathon or marathon training programs. That is my husband and coach. So if you haven't heard of Steve and you don't really know much about me, then maybe you could go listen to episode 1 and you'll hear a little bit more. So if you're listening to this on Friday, the 5th of May, the contest ends today. So you have until 11:59 p.m. Eastern time to email me a screenshot of your rating and review to podcast@tinamuir.com. If you're listening to this after the 5th of May, I'm afraid it's too late to win, but the programs will be available on my website in the next few weeks. And you can leave a review on either iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. So last week we talked to Nate Helming of The Run Experience for a fun but very informative episode about mobility, flexibility, busy schedules, and how to undo the effects of sitting all day. It was a great episode and a lot of fun, as I mentioned. Now today's episode is full of absolute gold. When I tried to write the show notes, I had a really hard time not turning it into a 5,000 word blog post, as there was just so much in here that Dr. Brett McCabe gave us, and it can really change your running performance forever. I'm not going to tell you anymore because I'm probably going to mess it up if I try and remember what he said. So let's just get to it and meet Dr. Brett McCabe. Brett, I am so excited to have you on the Running for Real podcast. Thank you so much. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. The fact that I'm on a running podcast is a little shocking.
Your family is going to be like, what is going on?
Exactly. What's he running from?
Well, I think there are so many things that could apply to our runners today. And I mean, obviously, running wasn't a focus within your book, but there were so many things that could apply. And I wrote notes all over it. I had probably 50 questions I wanted to ask you. So this is going to be tough for me to select them down. But firstly, before I begin, I wanted to ask you, you kind of shared your own story in the book about how you kind of realized that you wanted to focus on performance and psychology and sports psychology. And you mentioned about it kind of clicked for you and you like when you hear it click in people. Is it a case of that with sports psychology? Like you can kind of see it click in people's minds, or is it not quite that simple?
You know, I think that's a great question. And thank you for the comments on the book. To me, it's kind of like walking through a house and turning on the lights as you go from room to room. Mm-hmm. And then you find that big comfy couch where you feel the most comfortable. And so as you walk from room to room, you turn on the lights and you take into account what's going on and you move through each room. To me, growth and performance is all about learning, and it's learning from experience to experience. For me, when the click happened is when I was willing to allow and really be vulnerable to the outcome. I was able to divorce my meaning of who I was from what I was trying to accomplish. And more importantly, I mean, look, I love it when people say, I just don't care anymore and I play great. Well, of course you care, but you wouldn't try. Mm-hmm. What you're not caring about, and that's what's really what they're saying, is what I'm not caring about is the negatives. And for me, that was the click when I realized that I could actually do it. And I didn't have to do everything it took to control the outcome.
Yeah. And we are going to go into that because that's one of the major focuses in the Mindside Manifesto and just so many things that we can unpack from that, even just what you just said right there. But one thing that you kind of started with early in the book that I thought we could maybe begin with is a lot of runners kind of feel like they're always falling short of their goals, kind of never quite get there. We're left feeling kind of inadequate and end up comparing ourselves to others. So, you know, what could be happening here and how do we kind of stop ourselves from doing this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So one of the reasons why we feel inadequate when we compare ourselves to others is we never compare ourselves to areas that we have strengths. That's just not who we are. Mm-hmm. We don't ever look at somebody and say, man, I'm really, really fast. I'm as fast as anybody in the world. And I want to compare myself to somebody who runs just like me. What we do is we identify things in other people that are our inherent insecurities. And the reason we do that is it's an evolutionary thing, is that if we cannot be content in life, we simply can't, because if we were content, we would never grow. And if we never grow, we stop getting new experiences and having new and more valuable learnings to mm-hmm. develop to us from a humanity standpoint. And so when we're comparing ourselves, a lot of times that drive to search is that we have a disconnect within us, a lack of security of who we are, and even more so, a lack of appreciation and compassion for the success that we actually have. Mm-hmm. So because we need more and because we need to see better things, we will keep searching until we identify that facet, that aspect of us that we can't easily overcome by just having a different perspective. We go, there it is. That's the area that's holding me back, because it creates the biggest dissonance. And when it creates dissonance, now we have to resolve it. So what do? We identify somebody else and say, they've got it. And we look at ourselves and you ain't got it. And now I have to work to overcome it. Mm-hmm. So that's a cycle that can be actually pretty, unfortunately, it can be pretty effective early on. Think about it. If you see something that you don't like in yourself, and using that as a broad term, and you work hard to overcome it and you feel good about it. Mm-hmm. So you just, from a behavioral psychologist standpoint, you just reinforced that behavior. So early in a growth mindset, early in a growth of an athlete, we do that hundreds and hundreds of times, and it reinforces the behavior of look, identify a weakness, work to overcome it, feel good about ourselves. And guess what? Now I got to do it again. Mm-hmm. Because if you were early in your running career and you're like, well, that was good. I finished the race without stopping. And you said, that's all I ever wanted to do. Well, then you would never raise the bar. What do you're just going to naturally find that within yourself? You're not. There's no way. Mm-hmm. No way.
So then if that's the case, you know, you said about we like hold ourselves back with this and we kind of keep reinforcing that behavior and searching for that comparison and someone to kind of confirm what we kind of are looking for, as you said. You kind of talked about a manifesto being kind of declaring what you want and your goals and your journey. So how do we find a balance between, in this social media world, a balance between sharing our goals and our journey and not allowing that to kind of overtake us?
Well, your goals and that journey should not be your entire identity, right? Mm-hmm. So if your goals are, I'm not a big goals person because I think they create artificials. Okay. I'm a desire person. I'm a want person. I'm a vision person. What do you want? Like once we understand what we truly want in life, it's easy to set up ideas to accomplish them. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I don't know if you've ever watched the show House Hunters on HGTV, right? It's an addictive show. And people get on there and they say, well, what do you want? And they go, well, I want a 4-bedroom house with kitchen and area to outdoor entertain on a acre land. They say, well, what do you have? Well, I have $80,000. It's like, okay, our wants just derive that. But it's amazing that without those folks declaring what they truly want, they can never come to a compromise that actually accomplishes multiple of those different bullet points. Mm-hmm. So we're so afraid to say what we want. I mean, there's the old joke in the business movies where somebody's sitting across in an interview, a young executive, and the boss says, what do you want in your life? And the executive goes, I want your job. But what's wrong with that? Yeah. I mean, there's a way to do it with decorum, but what's wrong with that? Saying, I want to be this. Now, not everybody wants to be that. So for me, a manifesto is an idea. It's finally resolving the fact within us that I want to succeed, or I want this. This is my mindset to help me achieve what I want. If you can't do that, then you're not being honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us are afraid to really open up and be honest and be vulnerable to ourselves to say, I want this. I really do.
Yeah.
Because two things happen. One is you say you want it and you work hard and you don't achieve it. That's disappointing. But if you made the investment to achieve it and you fail short, there's also that fear of why did I waste all that energy on an outcome that I didn't have as a guarantee. People who get caught in that trap get caught in a trap of not seeing the value that they learn from themselves. I had drinks last night with a buddy of mine who's CEO of companies, and he's in between, and he's doing some consulting for us. And he said, you know, last time I saw you, I was in a position where a deal was getting ready to happen that could have been life-changing. And that night after I left you, he said, the deal fell apart. The next morning, I jumped on a flight to Frankfurt, Germany, and spent a week trying to salvage the deal. He said, right now, even though the logic, rational part of my brain tells me the best thing that could have ever happened to me was that deal fell apart. He said, I'm still hurt. My ego is still hurt. Years of working this deal and it's gone. And I said, I can't tell you the number of times in my business on the building of the mind side that I thought I needed to do this or that. And I had everything lined up. I thought it was good to go. And then all of a sudden something didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I'd be disappointed and frustrated. But that resolve of having a little bit of an ego impact and pulling back and saying, wait a second here, what is it that I really want? Those things were not what I really wanted. They were accommodations to what I think I wanted. And so until we fully lock into what we want, and what I told him is, you know, I said, look, I said, one of the best songs ever written is a song by Garth Brooks called Unanswered Prayers. And it's the thought that, you know, he goes back to his high school reunion, to a high school football game, and he sees his girlfriend that he wanted to marry so bad. He prayed every night that they would be married. They didn't. He met his new wife and they're so much happier. And he just realized some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. Mm-hmm. Athletes want success all the time, because a part of us deep down wants success because we have to have it in order to feel valued by ourselves. If we can remove ourselves from that destructive nature and say, I want it because I want it. I want to achieve it because it feels good. Like I really enjoy it. And will I be disappointed if I fail? Yeah. But will I be okay? Of course. Then I will learn.
Okay.
And that's why a manifesto is so important, is because if you don't fully declare, then how do you know if you ever achieved it?
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And so if someone is listening right now and they're thinking, okay, how can I apply this to my running? How can I know what I really want? Like, is this something, it's like one of those things, the first thing you think about when you wake up in the morning, it's something that when you say it, you're a little bit embarrassed to admit it because it seems so high. Like, how do you know what your true deep down want is?
That's the $1 million question. There's a lot of books written on finding your purpose. There's a lot of books written on knowing your passion of life, but to me, I call it red wine therapy. Get a glass of red wine, sit on your back deck, go to a coffee shop, get a latte, and put some headphones in your ear and put a white piece of paper down and just say, what do I want? And allow it to be free flowing. Mm-hmm. I looked at my dad growing up. My dad was extraordinarily important in my life. He was a college baseball player. He went to pharmacy school and got accepted by some of the top med schools in the country and couldn't afford to go. So he went into the military with the idea that maybe he'd eventually go to med school. He never did. And I think after he retired from the Air Force, 20 years of a pilot or as a navigator, he went back into pharmacy, and he always regretted being a pharmacist. It wasn't a shameful job. It was a job that he just felt that he was never able to do his skills, because the degree that he went into was not the degree he was practicing. You know, back in the day, he finished in probably 1962 or 63. He, you know, a pharmacist was kind of the doc on the corner. They weren't a doc, but they were the ones that would take this over the counter thing, take that, and they would help. It was a community feel. And he always told me, never fall short of what you really want in your life, because he said, I've always felt that my passion was missed. And it wasn't until he spent 4 months in the hospital with a very long rehabilitative and a couple near-death experiences, well, really blood pressure's running in the low 50s, so pretty much dead, that he went back to work as a pharmacist. And I remember the phone call. He called me and he said, for the first time in my life, I'm proud of what I do. He said, I found my passion. Mm-hmm. And he said, my passion was always, I thought, in a job, but it was in helping people. He said, I always love helping people. And he said, I was wrong for so long that I was trying to find it in a job title. So your question is, you know, a lot of times we try to put things in boxes. The mind works on predictions. It works on commonalities. We try to put things, you know, if we eat at a restaurant, we're trying to figure out is what cuisine is this? Is this Mexican or is it Italian or is it, you know, the greatest thing is when we don't know, we call it fusion. So, you know, that's what we try to do with the experiences of the day. We try to put them in boxes and we do that with our manifestos. We do that with our passions. We do that with our desires. You know, it's not wrong for somebody to sit down and say, I don't know what I want in running, but I do want this. And then if you write it down and you look at it and it makes you kind of uncomfortable, but also kind of empowered, it's a pretty powerful place to be.
Okay.
And then that's the fun thing or the challenge. The fun thing from a psychologist standpoint is how we start building to get there.
Mm-hmm. So then that was what I was going to ask about next. So you talked in the book quite a lot about, you know, the mental side and how important it is. And you talked about that there's a big difference between fixing athletes and using, you know, mental training for a constructive role. So for people listening who think, well, why wouldn't I fix problems? You know, what we talked about at the very beginning there, why not just keep fixing things that are wrong? And instead, why do you need to just step away?
We always want to be self-correcting. We always want to be developmentally improving. We always want, if we have something that's causing us pain, you know, we need to do something to make sure that that thing doesn't continue to cause us pain. But when the motivation is to fix a problem, what it actually is telling you that you're not actually trying to grow and get better. What you're trying to do is just fix a problem and that is good enough. I'd rather all of us be working towards a mastery position, a belief of being in a position of excitement and like a puzzle, like we're trying to put puzzles together. We're trying to grow. And when we're stuck with trying to fix problems and our motivation is to fix, we're not actually trying to improve. We're trying to improve by subtraction. And I want to improve by growth. And sometimes growth is understanding that I struggle in the first, if you're running a 10K, I'm struggling in the first, in the kick, in the early kick. I'll give you an example. I've got a miler that I work with, a collegiate miler, and she had struggled her entire career. And she came final semester, came to see me and said, look, I'm at a point where I just want to enjoy this final season. I said, well, let's do it. I mean, what do you have to lose? You've got a job already lined up. You know, you're going to grad school. I mean, you got everything else. This is your opportunity. And I said, what is it? Well, the burdens throughout this entire career have been what's causing my frustrations. I haven't reached my potential. I keep, you know, I find myself this monkey getting on my back and this gorilla getting on my back as I'm running and I get more and more frustrated. And I said, what is your strength? And she said, well, I mean, if you really look at it, I'm really, really fit. I've got a great kick in the last quarter, but I try to hold on to make sure I have a kick that I end up expending a lot of energy. And I said, why don't we just not fix the, because she wanted to fix the front. Mm-hmm. I said, let's not fix the front. Let's invest in the backside. You're really good at what you do. And have you ever run out of gas? Never. I said, okay. I said, so why don't we look at this when you line up that there are some people whose advantage is how they go out fast and others are how you finish fast. Mm-hmm. Let's not lose. Let's not, you know, go slow, but let's believe in what we do well and make it better. Mm-hmm. So well, let's start understanding. I'm one lap away from my kick. I'm one half from my kick. I'm in my kick now. Go. And all of a sudden, her times and her PRs just kept every single time. Instead of fixing the problem that she wasn't a fast starter, what we did is we got her believing in how great her strength really was. Mm-hmm. What do you think happened to her front side? It got faster because we stopped throwing energy at things that may just naturally have problems. Mm-hmm. Big deal. Big deal. Let's focus on the things that we need to. Let's focus on the strengths. And the fix, the mentality of the fix, the mentality is that's identifying that there's something inherently wrong with us and that we're not good enough as we are. I want to always be a work in progress and a work of improvement, but we're okay. We're okay.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I think that's important because a lot of people do tend to, we're all guilty of trying to fix our problems and trying to fix the things that aren't working rather than focusing on what is yep. working. And you talked a lot about the fixed versus growth mindset. So maybe you could explain a little bit about that and maybe the game plan to just go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, Carol Dweck in the book Mindset, and a lot of this comes from the academic world, studying how kids take tests. If you really think about it deeper, people who have a growth mindset believe that they are constantly a work in progress. And that's a very, very powerful and successful mindset to have, mm-hmm. because everything I do is not a determinant of who I am. Everything I do is an opportunity to build who I am. That's a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. I've worked with a lot of people who are fixed mindset folks, and the underlying aspect of fixed mindset, despite the fact that they're going to promise you the world that they believe in themselves, is the fact that they don't believe in themselves. They just don't. Because if they believed in themselves, why are they holding themselves to a rigid identity of who they are? People who hold the rigid nature of who they are, it's what they're saying is, I only believe in myself when I'm in these parameters. Mm. A growth mindset person, the game plan, which is the center of everything that we do in the mind side, is that your self-belief drives everything. Who you are and what you believe about yourself is power. It is the ticket to success. I know a lot of us succeed and we want to be humble, but I've really never met somebody when they succeed and you go, so I have no idea how I did this. I mean, I never thought I could do this. They may say I could have never imagined, but when they were in that moment, they believed.
Yeah.
And belief is the fact knowing that there are certain facets of me. There's two concepts that I believe in very strongly, and I think this is important for people to understand. I touch on it very, very briefly in the book. It's going to be in the next. It's something that has been developed pretty effectively since the book came out, and it's going to be in the next one I'm writing right now. But it's this concept of capability and capacity.
Yeah.
Okay. So mentioned it very briefly. Capability is your underlying ability set, your skills, your strengths, your talents. Every day we train, we make investments into that capability. So if you look at it, it's you look at an athlete, let's say running, you look at them and say, okay, they're long, they're lanky, they've got great lungs, they've got a great cardiovascular load, they got a great kick to them. Okay, those are all assets. And in people's capabilities, there are certain things that are deterrents or detriments to their overall ability. That's just human nature. But capability doesn't win anything unless you're in a talent discrepancy, whereas you're the most talented person in the room by far. And for a lot of athletes, that's how it is growing up. They're the most talented athlete. They work at it a little bit better than everyone else, and they can bypass. So their talent, their ability alone can overcome them. But there always comes a point where everything becomes equal. And once you get to the top of the mountain of performance, the differences between greats, okay, take Usain Bolt out. Mm-hmm. I mean, Usain Bolt is just a freak physically. But for the most part, most of us in our environments, we are about equal. But we have assets that allow us to sit at the table and provide different strengths. The ability to meet the demand of today, of today's race, is what I call capacity. It's, am I able to meet the demands of the moment? Now, the thing is, capacity is always a percentage of overall capability. We will never, in the history of our life, ever maximize our capability. Because, you know, what I'm saying is, you may be the greatest runner in the world, but if you never get a chance to jump, and jumping is one of your strengths because you're a former steeplechaser, and but now you're running a 10K, you didn't have to jump anything, so you didn't maximize your capability.
Okay.
Capacity is understanding that every day I come to the table with something, some percentage of my overall ability. Am I going to focus on what's missing that day? Like, I've got an upper respiratory infection. I'm tired. I didn't sleep as good last night. Man, it's a little cooler than I like. The air's a little heavier. I got bumped early. I got out of my rhythm. Or are you going to focus on the fact that there's always a percentage removed from there, but at 85%, I'm still pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. And if at 85%, I am still really damn good, then let me maximize that. Where we get in trouble as athletes, and this goes back to the fixed mindset, is when we take the moments of today and the outcomes of today to prove, to validate our underlying ability. That's where athletes fall into the trap. But that's why underdogs do so well, mm-hmm. because they already know they can't win the capability game. They're lacking something, but they can win with what they have. And for me, great athletes, great teams look at the moment and go, this is what I have. Let's do something with it. And so what I want my athletes to understand, and I heard this on a podcast and it was a validation, and I cannot remember who the athlete was, but she was an American triathlete and she was on Tony Robbins' podcast. And I think she was probably the American's greatest opportunity for gold a while back. And for her first Olympics in Sydney, she trained with the idea of the perfect race, the perfect scenario, the perfect kick, the feel. And she said, as soon as the gun went off, she said, I was within 100 meters of the start line and I got kicked in the head and got dizzy in the water. Mm-hmm. So all those 4 years of training, preparing for perfect, was out the door in a second, one kick, an inadvertent kick. So she said, I had a terrible race. I could never overcome it. I felt frustrated, angry. Why did this happen? I didn't get to showcase who I was, showcase what I was able to do, all those other thoughts that we all struggle with.
Yeah.
Instead, for the next one, she prepared for being the best in the worst scenarios. Well, capacity is saying, you know, I give a challenge to my athletes. How great can you be when your capacity is below 50%, that you don't feel well? You have a lot of doubts and insecurities. See, doubts, insecurities, fears, they rob us of our capacity. So we have to be willing to look at them and say, those are normal. What if I run out of gas? What happens if I don't have my kick? What happens if I feel bad? What happens if I don't feel the rhythm out there? What happens, all those other thoughts? What happens if I'm in the middle of a race and I feel like I have nothing else to give? Mm-hmm. But people with maximum capacity, what they do is they go, but I still have this. See, I believe strongly that we all have a tank inside of us that is like, there's the old Volkswagen Bugs. When he ran out of gas, he just flipped a switch and they had like another gallon in there. Mm-hmm. I feel like we all have that other gallon, mm-hmm. because it's really hard for us to ever get to the emptying spot. There are people, especially in running sports, where, you know, we see physiological detriment to athletes who push too hard. Not a lot of other sports do that. So I'm not telling people that that's what you should do. But at the same time, I think it's, to me, it's one of those things that as athletes, we have to understand that we can always find a way.
Yeah.
And that's capacity. And that's the growth mindset.
Yeah. That's so powerful. And thank you for explaining that and putting it into perspective. And you did mention that in the book. And I really enjoyed that because I hadn't thought about it in that way. So that was good to read. And then you kind of touched on it just while you were talking. It made me think about, you talked a lot about expectations being one of the mental burdens that we kind of experience. And I thought maybe you could explain some of the factors of these mental burdens that we go through, like expectations for one, fear of failure or success, and then the letdown against inferior competition. Because those are things I think runners experience a lot. And expectations really tend to kind of mess with us. And I'm sure they do in other sports too.
They do. But what makes it harder in running is you have a clock.
Yeah.
You have a time. And really, as much as I would love to say that the time is uniform, it's never uniform. It's different day to day. There was a great piece written by a guy by the name of Martin Keimer. And Martin Keimer is one of the elite golfers in the world, US Open champion or PGA American champion. I can't remember what he won, but he won a major. And he was leading the Players Championship. It was essentially the fifth major. And he played out of his mind the first day. And the second day, he was still in the lead, but it wasn't near the same. And a reporter asked him, how hard is it to do that day in to day out, trying to recreate what you had yesterday? He said, no. I never recreate. I always create. Oh, I love it. And he said, because every day I wake up, it's a new day. I have different feels. I eat different things for breakfast. I can try to do all the same things over and over again, but that's a waste of my energy. I accept the fact that every day is different. And my job is to create what I can every day. And I actually had a shot putter, a discus thrower last year, who had his career year in college, came in very high in the NCAAs. And he said, every day I create. And that was his mantra, create, don't validate. And the idea was create every day with what I have and what's available to me. So to me, that's pretty great, is to always create. Now, where expectations get us is expectations are entitlements. They're based on something we've done in the past, trying to predict something in the future based on something that we usually fear. If it's something that you really want and you know it's a risk, you don't expect to get it. Mm-hmm. You got to look at the root word, expect. Why would you expect anything? This world is an unknown place and performance is an unknown mistress. It does not care what you want. It's going to challenge you to fight for what you desire. And expectations are burdens based on the fact that I've had a great week. Nobody ever comes in and says, God, I really thought I should have run faster than that when they did. Everyone says, I thought I was going to run that fast. No, they said, When they succeed, they go, I just went for it. You know, I was shocked. But when we fail, we say, I thought I should have run faster than that. Yeah. And should is such a negative word. And in psychology, it was coined by a psychologist by the name of Albert Ellis. Don't should on yourself. And the other one, it's a little bit more graphic, is don't masturbate. In other words, should and must are both telling you that you failed to do something. And so it's a way of punishment of yourself. And expectations are entitlements. Just because you've had a great week of practice, those are investments. Those are not mandates. Those are not entitlements. You are not entitled to a good race because you had a good week of practice. You've invested in yourself with a great week of practice. Now you have to go maximize capacity.
So how do we get out of that thinking if a runner is kind of catches themselves and thinks, you know, I do keep getting in that should have mindset or that expectations. How do we stop that?
So the first thing we do is we try to run without any expectations, and then we lower them completely. So we look at things that we're in control of, like effort, intensity, mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, when the going gets tough and you get into that darkness of pain, what are you going to turn to? You're not going to be shocked that it's there, because what happens with expectations is you run with this heavy burden, and the first indicator that something's not right, you start challenging yourself and you start getting mad at yourself. So expectations, I want high demands. Demands are behaviors. So I'm going to be ready. I'm going to go out strong. I'm going to run my strategy. Can I run my strategy for the entire race, or am I going to abandon it? You know, let me run through the end line. Let me not change it because I'm getting panicky. There's a time to adjust, obviously. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's, to me, the better answer is let's lower expectations. I expect nothing. I have no idea how I'm going to race tomorrow, but I do know that I'm going to give 100% towards that challenge.
Okay. That's helpful. And then what about related to that pressure? So I can just imagine someone thinking right now, okay, you know, it sounds great saying, take the expectation off today. I'm going to run my best. But when you're in that moment, it's like hard to accept and just take the pressure off yourself. So any thoughts on how to do that?
Well, we don't want to take the pressure off of ourselves. So what we want to do is we want to apply the pressure towards something that's actually constructive.
Okay.
And the constructive aspect of it is look, I do this for a reason. I like to be in this position. Mm-hmm. And that's why most people run. In my experience with runners, I mean, you're a runner, you're around more than I am. Most people run because they love the challenge of themselves. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's an artificial of winning races that feels really good, but the real desire is that challenge within themselves to find extra seconds and to find things like that. That's the exciting thing for most athletes and most runners. So that's why runners, I've met very few runners who stop running after their competitive career is over. They just find other ways to compete in that because the competition is just a vehicle that they're using to be able to be self-invested.
Okay.
So to me, I'd rather somebody, when the pressure's there, just say, okay, I like this. Like this is fine. Whatever the time is. I mean, do we want to win? Yeah, I want to win. Do I want to beat my times? Well, that's why I've trained so hard, because I want to set the best time, but I don't know what that time is. So why define ourselves by some artificial boundary? Mm-hmm. Instead, let's do this. Let's put pressure on ourselves to cross the line knowing that there are no regrets.
Yep.
If we do that, then that's a better answer. Don't allow a time to define an outcome. Mm-hmm. Now, if you got a split or you're looking at some way that keep you, that's fine. But I've also found a lot of runners that are married to a clock and a split.
Yep.
And they're rarely going, oh, okay, I'm really good. Most people are going, oh, crap. Why do we want to add those bricks into our backpack? Instead, I'd rather say, you know, I'm on the pace I want to be. That's good. I'm still within the window. Let's make a push here. Let's pick up some time. Let's pick up some ground. Let's go, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And use that as a challenge.
And then you mentioned about crossing the line with no regrets. I know a lot of people have asked me in the past about how to get out of their comfort zone and push themselves when they are in that moment to say, like, you want to cross the line with no regrets, but when you're in that moment of pain and of fear, how to kind of keep going. You talked about being defined or motivated by fear. So how can people kind of break through that if they're thinking, I think you talked about it in breaking the fishbowl. So
yeah. So the idea there, breaking the fishbowl, is that the human mind, the boundaries we place on ourselves is where we're comfortable in our performance indicators. All right. So just like the goldfish, The goldfish comes in, we buy goldfish, we put it in a bowl, that 5-gallon fish bowl. That goldfish is never going to jump out of that bowl. It's never going to try to slosh out the water, any of those things. It's just going to live happily. If you put it in a bigger bowl, it'll actually grow to be a bigger fish and so on. And the reason is it grows to the size that the boundaries placed on itself dictate. Mm-hmm. Well, we do the same thing. I was working with a college team, an entire athletic department for a while. And this athletic department in the SEC is not normally in the top of anything. They're not in the bottom, but they're kind of good in their sports. Every once in a while, one will run up and have a good year, but they're really good on average around the seventh, eighth, ninth range. And they're kind of good there. Mm-hmm. And they use excuses all the time. Like, well, we don't have the resources. We don't have the location. We don't have this. We don't have that. And it's all bogus. It's a mindset, because the mindset to somebody to come in and say, I'm going to succeed and I'm going for it. And I'm going to find my own resources and I'm going to find the best players. And we're going to have an attitude and a belief of wanting to accomplish. And unfortunately, what happens is coaches that do that at that university end up leaving because they're worn out by everyone else's fishbowls. Mm-hmm. But we're okay. I mean, every once in a while we have a good year, but to me, we got to break those fishbowls and say, why are we being defined based on our fears and insecurities? Why are we being defined based on some environmental indicator that's where we feel comfortable? We're better than that.
Mm-hmm. And is that something that you have to work on outside of running? Like, is
all the time?
Yeah. Okay.
All the time.
So what would be some things, like, let's say someone is a marathoner and they are finding around mile 18, they're thinking, you know, I can't do this. I'm going to stop, and they're struggling, and then they want to get to the line with no regrets, but they're really going through it. Is this something they, how can they practice it in training or in life?
Yeah, that's the question there is, when the going gets hard, what are you relying on? Are you relying on burdens and overcoming burdens? Or are you relying on the fact that you recognize that mile 18 is really hard, and for the next 2 miles, we're going to make a concerted push to pick up the pace?
Okay.
And understand that it may result in a certain time that's good or bad, but I'm going to learn about that feel right then.
Okay. I see. And you also talked about, I think you were using another example, but you said about focusing on the next 2 minutes, which I thought was really going to be helpful for runners, kind of saying, just get through the next 2 minutes. So maybe you can explain that.
So one of the words that we use a lot with a little bit of ambiguity is pain, right? So pain means injury, and pain also means discomfort. Does all discomfort equal injury? No, of course not. So when we're experiencing pain while we're running, it's trying to tell us that there's something wrong. The more we focus on pain, the more the pain is being amplified. Mm-hmm. But distraction is an amazing tool to pain. Now, we're not talking injury pain, so let's take that one out. You know, we don't need to be out there running on stress fractures and really bad stuff. We don't want to do it for the damage. I'm just talking about discomfort pain. Mm-hmm. And so if you're running and you can distract yourself to say, look, let's count the next X number of steps. You know, for the next mile, can I hit this number of steps? Everybody has their own strategies. It's important not to say that you're finding somebody else's strategy. It's the fact that when you're in that situation, what is the distraction that allows you to push? I had a swimmer who told me, you know, they spend a lot of time looking at a black line on the bottom of the pool. And like they said, you really can't stop, because if you stop and put your foot down, you're done. And everybody laughs at you for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, it's kind of true. I mean, but he said, also, when you feel like you're at the moment of vomiting, where are you going to vomit? You're going to vomit in your own water that's in front of your own face. And so he's like, you got to find a way to get you distracted. And this person sings the Star Spangled Banner when it starts to get hard, and just sings it in their head and tries to sing it as if they're at the Super Bowl. And I thought it was kind of funny. It's cool. Like, pain became a trigger, not for a worry, but for something to do to move. And I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it works. The swimmer's done extremely well. But it was just, I thought it was funny. It was like, they just found this place to go to, kind of a dissociative place. I'm going to go to the Super Bowl and sing the national anthem because everybody remembers it.
But this has to be something that's like individualized, like so the person, so all the runners listening right now can say, okay, I'm going to take myself to, you know, my beach home on the shores.
But here's the deal. Like, if you're not getting there in training, then how do you know what to rely on in competition? So you've got to, and I don't know how running really works, but I got to imagine there's times where you're gassed in training. That is, to me, where you practice this stuff. And, you know, it's times of saying, you know what, I'm going to run with a fast group today. This group is going to be really quick, but I want to feel that feeling and I want to work to find what works for me. I don't, you know, when we're doing it in the competition for the first time, it's almost a survival thing, but somebody who knows where to go when it's hurting and they can dissociate, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, definitely. I should say before we go on, I just had one more thing I wanted to ask you about before we get on to the final questions. But this book that Brett wrote is just so, I mean, I read it pretty much in one go because it was just so interesting in so many things that I think a lot of you really will appreciate and learn so much from. And, you know, I feel like I've picked up some tactics that I'm going to use in the future. So the Mindside Manifesto is definitely one I wouldn't invest in. I will put links in the show notes at tinamuir.com/episode7. And yeah, so I just wanted to ask you one more thing about one thing that stood out to me that I think our listeners will be really interested in was you talked about the fog and how regression is healthy and natural. And runners tend to be very hard on ourselves and kind of always expecting, like you said, always expecting results or expecting to improve. But kind of explain a bit about this fog and what it is and how we can kind of get through this chaos fear trap.
Yeah, and the fog is a place that nobody likes to be. And I love it when I tell my athletes that you're in the fog, and usually the fog comes with another four-letter curse word. But what I'm trying to tell them is when you're in the fog, so in the learning cycle, we have a moment where we're hunting for some improvement. Okay. We're striving, we're growing, and we get into a honeymoon phase initially. And that honeymoon phase is a cool thing where we really simplify. The problem with it is it does not last because we as people have to overcomplicate. We try to apply it in new landscape. We try to apply it in new areas. You know, we want to see more and more. We try to extend it. And then what happens is we start crashing. And when we crash, we get into the depths of the fog. And the fog comes with a decision point. And the decision point is, do I abandon the path I'm on to try to find the next honeymoon, which is always short term? I mean, if people are married just for the honeymoon, they're never going to have lasting marriages. Or do they stick with it and work through the struggle? And during that fog is when we overcomplicate, overexpect, too many expectations, all the other thoughts, fears, all the other struggles that we have. We doubt ourselves at a deep level. But just like we're driving through the fog, it's important that we reduce some of our stimuli. We quiet everything down and we trust the one or two things that we know very well. So my youngest daughter has just gotten her driver's license and we had a driving home from dinner last night and pretty heavy rain and she was behind us. And I said, look, don't turn on your bright lights. Just work with your regular beams. I know that sounds counterintuitive. Turn down your radio, reduce the stimuli around you and just stay between the lines and don't go too fast. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the same thing we need to do in life when we're in that fog and we're struggling is to focus on, you know, reduce some stimuli. A lot of that stimuli is internal. And then we open up our ears to everybody externally. And then work through it and just keep trudging along. And guess what happens? You emerge out of it and all of a sudden there's this aha clicking moment, just like we started the conversation about where it just clicks and you find it. And that aha moment drives us to mastery. Now, unfortunately, we don't stay in mastery long because we raise the bar and we start over again. And so we're constantly on this cycle of learning.
And with regards to that, you kind of talked about, you know, reducing the stimuli and, you know, it's going to keep happening. But when we are in that moment, we almost find we often keep trying harder, keep trying to force it. And, you know, you talked about the protection mode, but why does trying harder make it worse?
Because most of the time when we're trying harder, we're trying to survive versus I'm trying to learn, I'm trying to grow through this. That's hard. I mean, look, if it was easy, we wouldn't struggle. The fact is that most of us are trying harder because we feel like we need to do more. and we don't allow what we're doing to actually work. The people, the greatest people who get off the struggle bus are the ones that know they will get off the struggle bus.
That's so true. And it, although it's difficult, you know, it can be done, and just keep reminding yourself of that if you are going through a struggle. And another thing that comes to mind with that, that I know we tend to do, is you talked about vulnerability, and we tend to think, you know, if I can just have a few good runs, if I can just have a few good workouts, then, you know, it'll all come together. But why should we not be kind of thinking that way?
Yeah. If then statements are killers, because you never stay good enough to what you're doing. And, you know, what happens is, if I do this, then this will happen. If I do this, versus I'm going to do this and I'm going to continue to work through this. And that's the hard thing, because if thens make all logical sense in the world, but they don't actually do anything successful. So to me, you know, if thens are a lot of times about, it's this contingency plan. Like, we don't believe we're actually good enough.
Yep. And that often is the root of it. And again, guys, I would suggest going out and looking into this book, which I will put a link in the show notes, The Mindside Manifesto. I have loved talking to Brett today about these topics. And there's so many more questions that I had about it, because it was just so interesting. But I want to go on to the Running for Real 4 right now. I usually ask people for a unique nutrition tip, but maybe instead of that, we could do maybe a quick tip about how people can fine tune their mental nutrition.
I think two things. One is, have a time every day to allow the mind to rest, to heal. And reflection is very important. But also, don't forget, eating is very important for mental acuity. And the brain needs nutrition. It needs water, and it needs protein. It needs carbohydrates. And if we're not feeding the brain weighs, you know, the old folklore is 5% of the human body, but it takes up about a quarter of its energy. So if we're not feeding the brain, then we're actually not sparking the body.
Okay. So it's, yeah, so nutrition is important, just not just for physical, but for mental as well. So, and then maybe, I usually ask people a running for real moment. So maybe you could share quickly, if you want, your story about, you know, that real moment where you talked about during your practice and your training, where, you know, things were just going wrong and, you know, you really felt vulnerable yourself.
You know, for me, the biggest challenge is being vulnerable is, I just didn't, deep down, I didn't know if I really believed I was good enough to succeed. And that's a scary place to be. And so I had put up all kinds of barriers. And it wasn't until my back got against the wall and I was forced and challenged to have to be in that position, that I was willing to go for it. And I guess what I want people to understand is, you don't have to have your back against the wall. You don't have to be in a do or die situation in sports. You can learn the tricks and you can learn the skills to be able to be successful long before that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And then a high moment. I mean, I obviously know what yours is, but maybe you might have a different one, or for anyone who hasn't read the book, what would be a high moment?
Well, from a baseball standpoint, it was probably pitching in the College World Series. But I think the high moment for me was, it's kind of different. I remember walking through campus. I'm going to shift gears, but I remember walking through campus when I was an undergrad thinking, why would anybody go to grad school and get a doctorate degree? That's stupid. And the hard thing about a PhD is that there's no finite end. You can stay in school as long as they'll let you. The graduate school will put a limit on you eventually, but there's never a definitive end to it. It's always up to you. And I was one of the moments of actually finishing my PhD that felt really good, but then getting a license as a psychologist and getting the letter in the mail that says I was, because you can't call yourself a psychologist if you're not licensed. And so being able to call myself a licensed psychologist, I remember where I was. That was a high point, because there was a lot of times that I wanted to get off that bus. And that, to me, that was a high for me. That was really cool.
And so off that, what is there anything you would say to anyone who, you know, has this goal, has this dream, or, yeah, not so much a goal, has a desire, and they're kind of in that moment where, like you said, you want to get off the bus. What would you tell them?
The short-term pain is never the real pain. Okay. The long-term appreciation and the long-term value is always worth it on the back end. And that doesn't mean that sometimes people are in the wrong pathway. We're always defined by short-term interests, but, you know, sometimes there's times that we need to change. But if you're something that you really want, find a way. Don't let other people deter you or anything like that.
Okay. I Love that. Thank you. And finally, what would you tell people that they should say to themselves when they're standing on the start line? Like, do you recommend like a power pose, or do you recommend, what would you say to people they should be doing when they're in that starting area before their big race?
Whatever they want to do. Whatever they want to do. If they want to get excited, get excited. If they want to just have a moment of zen, have a moment of zen. But whatever it is, do it as an investment and just invest it in you.
And what if someone is kind of thinking, okay, well, I usually feel so nervous, I'm going to throw up.
That's fine. Adrenaline and anxiety feel the exact same in the body. The only difference is how we interpret it. When we interpret it as fear, it becomes anxiety. When we interpret it as excitement, it's adrenaline.
Okay. So just switch your mindset and say, you know, I'm excited. I'm not nervous.
That's right. Great. It doesn't feel comfortable, but I'm excited to be here.
Okay, great. Well, Brett, thank you so much for coming on the show. Anything else you would like to say to our listeners or where they can find you for checking out the book? I will put a link, as I mentioned.
You got it. No, I'm just we drive by people all the time that are running, and I always tell my wife, I wish I could do that. And with a guy with some very deformed flat feet, who didn't realize he had asthma while he was playing baseball and couldn't understand why when you ran, we'd go out and run 5 miles. I couldn't understand why I couldn't speak. And now I'm post hip replacement. My running days are probably, I'm not built to run, and that's okay. But I see it with admiration. And I've always wanted to know what it felt like just to open it up and run and have that perfect gait. So I come to you with a lot of admiration.
Oh, well, thank you. And I appreciate that. And thanks for coming on the show. And I wish you the best of luck with the book and the future.
Thank you very much.
Mind blown. Okay, so maybe not mind blown, but that's definitely an episode to go back to over and over again. And for someone who doesn't run at all, what he talked about was so spot on for many of us. And I know I'll be using his advice in my running from now on. It was just such a great episode. And there's links to everything we talked about today, including that fantastic book of his. It really was a great read. And you can find it at tinamuir.com/episode7. Now, at that link right there, you can also enter the giveaway to be one of 5 winners of a marathon or half marathon training program from my husband and coach, Steve. Today, May 5th, is the final day you can enter, so make sure you do it today. And it's really simple to do. All you need to do is leave me a rating and a review on either iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, and email me a screenshot of your rating and review to podcast@tinamuir.com. If you're not sure how to leave a rating or review on either of those websites, either that tinamuir.com/episode7 or at tinamuir.com/marathon giveaway, there will be details on how to leave a review and a rating through a video format, so I make it nice and easy. I will be announcing the winners next week on social media earlier in the week, and then I will be announcing on next week's podcast so we can give those people a shout out if they are the winners. So make sure you subscribe to this podcast through your podcast player. So next week's episode with Angie and Trevor from Marathon Training Academy comes right through to your phone or tablet. And that means you don't have to search for it. And I know many of you are huge fans of these two, and they do not disappoint in this episode. So until next week, have a great time.
Thanks for listening to the Running for Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.